Abate la rimette dentro, esce Radu, porta vuota. Gol! Gol! Abbiamo battuto il gatto nero! Li abbiamo battuti tutti, Alessio! Grande Alessio! È bella la vita! Lava quella zolla, Alessio! Lava quella zolla, Alessio!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host Ollie Fisher, you can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher, and I'm joined once again by loyal co-host AJ.
What's up guys? It's me, Anthony. You can find me on Twitter at Torgard45. We do not have Madison with us today. He is actually overseas, went to Liverpool to watch the Everton and Liverpool game. He's one of those weird toffee fans, so he actually had a good time. But we're glad to be here, glad to do it. Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah, man, we've gone from 4 last week to 2 this week. But, you know, it is what it is. Me and you, we'll have a good show. I feel a bit sorry for Maddie flying halfway across the world to see a 0-0 draw, but at least it means that Liverpool are now kind of behind in the title race. So
yeah, I just saw a graphic today that, like, on New Year's or something like that, I believe they had a 10-point lead on City. Let me pull back up. That was nuts. Yeah, on December 29th, Liverpool had 54 points and City had 44. And I believe City's ahead of them now, so that's really funny.
Yeah, it's mad. It's mad. And it's a credit to City, because I think that what we're witnessing, and it's taken a while for people to realise, we're witnessing one of the best European sides that there's been in a long time. Perhaps, you know, they haven't gone the one step to be considered that across the whole. By, you know, if they were to win the Champions League this year, then I think that they would be considered that. That's like the final hurdle.
Who are you referring to? City or Liverpool?
City.
Yeah, I agree.
I think if they were to win the Champions League, then they'd finally be considered one of Europe's elite. But because, you know, they've been playing as low as the third division in the last 30 years, they don't really have the same amount of respect in terms of heritage that quite, you know, the traditional powerhouses of English football have, especially over here. But in recent years, you can't argue that they've been dominant. A lot of investment, don't get me wrong, but they're playing some good stuff, man, and it's just nice to watch good football, really.
Yeah, it is, and we'll see how they do in the Champions League. You know, their last game against Schalke was 3-2, so definitely not an easy game by any means, but they have the 3 away goals, so they should be fine, but we'll see what happens when... is that this week, the reverse? Is Champions League back this week?
Champions League is back this week, yeah. So, yeah, it's mad how quickly it comes back around, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So, oh yeah, tomorrow's Tottenham Dortmund. I should have known that. And yeah, Real Ajax, which Ajax is actually not out of that competition yet.
They
I would love to see the upset. I mean, going to the Bernabeu, they're gonna lose most likely, but it's cool that they're only one goal down.
I think that Spurs game will be more interesting, because 3-0 deficit means that Spurs are likely going to go to the what is it called? The Westfalenstadion, and try and frustrate and put men behind the ball. But I could see Dortmund getting an early goal in that. And, you know, if they're somehow 2-0 up at half time or something, it's basically a brand new game.
Dortmund definitely going to go for it. 100%. I mean, A, they have to. And B, it's at home. Spurs are obviously going to rest a little bit, and like you said, try and sit back. So that game's by no means over.
So, yeah, that's the Sempre football part of the podcast done. But before we get properly started, this show is brought to you, as always, by our friends over at Euro Fantasy League. So if you haven't already, make sure to check out our Serie A Fantasy League, and you can find out more details about that on our Twitter page via the pinned tweet. So yeah, get having a look at that. Milan stuff anyway, we've got another win to recap, another home clean sheet against Sassuolo at San Siro on Saturday night. We won 1-0 thanks to a first half own goal. What looked like a Musacchio goal at first, but was eventually ruled to be an own goal by Paul Lirola. And AJ, I didn't see this one. I was on my way back from Brighton, where Huddersfield lost 1-0. I don't want to talk about that.
Yikes.
It's pretty bad this season, but I don't want to go into it. This didn't sound like I missed a classic.
No, this was definitely classic in the sense that it's what we've seen the last couple seasons. It was honestly just not even scrappy. It was just kind of a shithouse win. I'd even argue maybe undeserved, but I don't think we were the better team. I think we were lucky to get the goal that we did. And yeah, Cecil just looked better than us, honestly. And sometimes that happens, but that's what separates the top teams from the bottom teams, is when the going gets tough, you know, you push through and find a way. And that's something that we've been lacking in quite some time. So it's nice to come out on top, even though the performance was really bad. I don't think it's going to be a trend. I think we're going to bounce back strong like we've been recently, but it definitely was a trying, tough game. They've kind of been our boogie team since really coming up in the league. You know, those first few seasons of them in Serie A, they beat us, I believe, almost. I know they beat us at least once a season. Could have been twice in those first two seasons. And it wasn't until that crazy 4-3 comeback in the 16-17 or 15-16 season, I believe.
Yeah.
That was really the turning point. That's when we started getting the better of them. But until then, they were smoking us each time.
Yeah. While you were saying that, I was just looking up. You want to compare luck, and especially sort of in recent years where we've been in the standings, the better teams are the teams that have finished above us. They've found a way to grind out games like that. They've found a way to win games, even if it's just by an odd goal. I just looked it up now. Inter have won 9 games this season by one goal. So
I don't think I saw this stat a while back, and it was like all the top teams that are just running away with the league, they all have multiple wins of like 3-0, 4-0, or like by that large of a goal margin.
Yeah.
And Juve was the only team without one. I think all of their wins were by a margin of either 1 or 2, which is honestly pretty crazy considering they haven't lost all season. And I think that just goes to show you how scrappy and tough even the lower level teams are in this league.
Yeah, without a doubt. It does show to an extent how competitive it is. I think we were very much like that. You know, we were grinding out wins by a goal. It was only really in the last couple of, well, actually the last 3 games before that, when obviously we won 3-0 at home. Against Cagliari, then we won 3-1 at Atalanta, and then we won 3-0 at home against Empoli, that we started to really flex our muscles and started to be a bit more clinical in the final third. And I think that's been important for confidence. So it was kind of a shame to see us go back to a game like this. But at the same time, I don't know if it's like what I've grown up watching with Huddersfield and what I've grown up watching with some of the classic sides that obviously Milan have had, some of the best defences and stuff like that. I really, really love to see us, like you say, shit out a 1-0 win. There's something really satisfying about it. I think it's because so many people were unhappy about it after the game as well. You know, complaining that we didn't make the right changes, or that, you know, we didn't go aggressively enough for the second goal, which I kind of agree with to an extent, because Sassuolo looked like they might be there for the taking in the last however many minutes. But yeah, it's 3 points, and importantly, with Inter's slip up, meant that we went up into third place, which is kind of uncharted territory for us.
Yeah, and I believe the last time we were in third place in the second half of the season was the last day of the 12-13 season. So,
yeah.
Or maybe it was 11-12, I can't remember. But
it was 12-13, yeah.
12-13, yeah. So definitely been quite some time since we've been this high up this late in the game. But like to your point, like you said, Inter slipped up and we capitalized. That's something we haven't done in a while either, is really seize those opportunities when they come to us. Even earlier this season, there was like 3 games where we were playing the team in 5th and we were in 4th, and a win would have, you know, separated the pack, and we got a draw, or they were in 4th and we were in 5th and we didn't win, or something like that. And it wasn't until the Roma game that I believe, did we draw against Rome or did we beat them? I can't remember.
We drew 1-1.
We drew. Oh, that's right, because Musacchio had that silly own goal there, or mistake that led to a goal. But really, I mean, we haven't capitalized on that, on our opponent slipping this season. And I think this was the first time, and it's kind of ironic that it was a poor showing that we actually capitalized in. So it's good to see that, like you said, the teams that have been finishing above us have found a way to win. And this is exactly why, you know, we found a way to win against a tough team, and it just so happened that all the other stars aligned. The team directly below us lost to the team below them, so we pushed that gap even more, and then we jumped the team directly above us because they lost some points also. And that the opportunities like that are hard to come by in football, and it's cool that we actually did it this time. Normally, we're thinking, if only we did that, you know, and this time we just say, hey, we did it, you know, so it's cool. And now a lot of people are saying we can make a push for second, which personally I believe we can. I don't know if it will happen, but I think we definitely can make that push.
Yeah, I would like to see us try and make that push. Obviously, Napoli lost to Juve on Sunday. We're recording this on the Monday, which again, for me, proves how vast the gap is between Juve and the rest of the league, but we won't get into that again. But yeah, I would like to see us push for second place. A gap that seemed completely insurmountable probably 2 or 3 months ago is now 8 points. It feels like just 8 points, but I mean, it is still 3 positive results away, you know, for us. But perhaps it does show that for a team that basically Milan are close to a team that challenged for the title last season. So that's something to be encouraged about, without a doubt. And I totally agree with you in the sense that I feel like we've been guilty, particularly in the last 2 or 3 seasons, of not taking our moments when they arrived. You know, results going in our favour, the pressure getting to the players, and, you know, we get a shitty home draw, or we lose away to a team that we're not meant to, or even, you know, we head into a crucial game against a team that's around us, and we can't get the job done. But like you said, the stars kind of aligned. We handled our business, and then Lazio absolutely dispatched of Roma, which means that we're now 4 points clear of fifth place. So things are looking on the up. Like I said, we've leapfrogged above Inter. And it's weird because obviously we only managed to score one goal on Saturday night, but I kind of wonder how much of it was like we were keeping some energy in the tank. And also, this was another stat that came out after the game on Saturday night, that Milan have kept a clean sheet in the opening 4 games of a calendar year for the first time since 1993, which I guess is a testament to just how good our defence is at the moment.
Yeah, and speaking of how good our defence is, this was another stat that came out of that game that I retweeted. Let me pull it up so I get it correct. Milan have the best defense in Europe's top 5 leagues since December. Since December 1st, we've conceded just 5 goals. The next best defense after us is Barcelona with 6 goals, which is pretty impressive because then it's, you know, Napoli, Torino with 7, Juve, Atleti, PSG with 8 goals. So, I mean, those are massive teams, barring Torino, all up there. And the fact that we are alone at the top is pretty fucking impressive. You know, when you look at the first half of the season, when everyone's main complaint was we couldn't keep a clean sheet, and now 4 months straight, we have only 5 goals conceded in however many games that is. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah, it's nuts. And, you know, if you were to look back through history, particularly through the middle, late 90s, when obviously Milan were the best and the biggest team in Europe.
Right.
We would have been top of that chart every single time in terms of barely conceding goals, because we had, without a doubt, one of the best defences in history throughout the mid-90s, under Sacchi, under Capello. And now we're back up there again. It just seems like, for whatever reason, whether it's just the amount of minutes that they've played together, whether it's Romagnoli and Musaccio gelling as well as they have, whether it is purely Romagnoli elevating himself to an elite level this season, which there are the stats to back that up, for whatever reason, we just don't look like conceding many goals. We're still giving away chances, but they're not clear-cut chances. Sassuolo were limited to efforts from distance, really, mainly, which was encouraging for us because Donnarumma, you know, if he's on his game, which he has been quite a lot recently, then he's gonna gobble them up, no problem at all. So, yeah, another game where we didn't really look like conceding, and one goal up the other end is enough to do the job. I mean, you mentioned...
Yeah, I'd say Donnarumma's a big part of that, honestly, the form that he's been in. I mean, Musacchio's not even really supposed to be our starting center back. It's supposed to be Caldara, who's just been effectively dead the whole season. You know, I know he just came back and played with the youth team, so that's fantastic. You know, he'll be back soon, but for the most part, we've been playing a second string center back, and next to obviously Romagnoli, who is statistically this season the best defender in the world at the moment. Now, I'm not saying overall he is, but statistically right now, yes, which is pretty freaking cool also. Mm-hmm. But just between him and Donnarumma, I think that's really doing it. Like you said, we've been giving away some silly chances, but between having an incredible goalkeeper and a captain who hasn't been dribbled by the entire season, that's what's really to attribute it. You know, I don't think Musaki was a bad defender, but he certainly isn't the one that's causing us our good fortune. In fact, one of the last couple goals was almost exclusively his fault. So, not putting any blame on. I mean, I guess I am, but not shitting on him. He's a fantastic player, but just the levels to it all. Anyways, continue.
He's been kind of underappreciated this year. That's one thing I will say. Obviously, everyone coming into the season when Caldara arrived from Juventus was expecting him to slot in right alongside Romagnoli because both young promising defenders, they can learn from each other, that kind of thing. But injuries haven't been kind to Caldara. He's actually played a Primavera game over the weekend, I believe, which means that he's pretty much on the road to recovery now. But I don't see a way that the way things are going, you don't change a winning formula. So I don't see how you can bench Musacchio at the moment for Caldara.
I agree. And actually, when we signed him, you could probably find my tweet from August or whenever it was, but I said I didn't think Caldara was going to become an immediate starter. Granted, I also said that about Piontek and was clearly wrong. but this one I got right. Granted, there was also injuries that helped me with this. But fun fact about that Primavera game that he played, that is the first time he's actually worn a Milan home jersey officially.
That's crazy. Right?
The only game he played, which was just a few minutes, was an away game. So, fun fact there.
Yeah, that is kind of crazy. He will get his opportunities, I think. But given the fact that obviously we're out of the Europa League now, we're entering the last one, hopefully two games of the Coppa Italia, we're going to be putting out our best 11 as much as possible. So it'll be interesting to see how Gattuso manages it. If it were me, I'd just give Caldara as much time as he needs to get fully fit, be that with the Primavera, or, you know, that's probably the best way for him to get game time. And then you can kind of reevaluate it at the end of the season.
Do you think he goes the Biglia route? You know, how he was the clear starter over Bakayoko, and then he got injured, Bakayoko became good, and now Biglia is coming off for the last few minutes to replace the starting Bakayoko. Do you think Caldara will take the last couple minutes from Musacchio?
I'm very apprehensive. This is probably straight from the coaching manual, but I'm very apprehensive that if your back four's keeping a clean sheet, especially if the lead is a narrow one like it was on Saturday night, you don't take out a defender with a few minutes left. You know, you just leave them in there because they're in their rhythm, and shaking things up could be dangerous. But I agree, if it's like Empoli and we're 3-0 up, bring him on for the last half an hour. Give him some minutes where you know the opponent's going to be coming at you because they're trailing in the game. I think there will be moments where it'll be right to throw him in. I'm hoping that the upcoming game against Chievo, which we'll come on to, we'll be in a position where we can bring players on that need minutes. And that's an important thing. That's what Gattuso gets paid to do as well, is to juggle these various players. It's interesting that you mentioned about Biglia, though, because he came on Saturday night with Bakayoko having... When I say this, it sounds bad, but he had probably his worst game since he hit this streak of form. He didn't seem as effective. He might be a little bit tired, Bakayoko. Would you consider starting Biglia against Chievo on Saturday night?
Yeah, I think if there's a game to start a player back from injury, it's Chievo. I personally, and this is no... Well, it's going to be disrespectful, but I don't mean it to be disrespectful against Chievo. I just think they are the weakest team in the league.
Table backs that up, man.
Are they in 20th right now? I don't even know.
Oh, yeah, by 7 points. They've won one game all season, drawn 10, lost 15, minus 32 goal difference. They're like historically bad. Like, everyone's talking about Huddersfield being...
It's not
being
even my opinion, then. It's historically proven Chievo is the worst team in Serie A. I would honestly back them to even get relegated from Serie B. I just think they're so bad. I think that's the easiest game of the all season. We're going to win it 4-0. But I think Conte should start that game. I think Biglia should start that game. And honestly, give Caldara a few minutes if we're up 2-2 or 3-0, you know, coming towards the last few minutes there. Mm-hmm. I think that's the game to get your confidence back for sure.
What do you think about maybe, I don't think he'll do this, just to get it on record, what do you think about maybe playing a diamond and playing two up front, get Cotrone and Piontek up there, and then if you need to make a change, you can revert to a 4-3-3, or you can bring Castillejo on up front, or Barini on up front. You know what I mean? Just so Cotrone gets some minutes and hopefully gets a goal under his belt.
I mean, this would be the game to play him. Piontek obviously hasn't scored in two games now, which is rare for him.
Sell him.
But it's also... just sell him. He's been a flop.
Yeah, man.
This is also the game, though, that... I mean, if we want to go for like individual glory, that you start him and see if he could pass Quagliarella, I can never say his name, Fabio, and Ronaldo in the Canon Capanieri. I can say that.
Yeah. I'm just looking at Chievo's team here, actually. There's quite a few recognizable names.
They're Sorrentino all flying
donkeys. In net. Literally are flying donkeys.
Yeah,
but Sorrentino in net, he's been in Serie A for a while. Ezequiel Schelotto at right back. He was at Brighton earlier this season, I think. But he was at Inter before that. Rigoni in midfield, Hetemäe in midfield, Marius Stepinski, who was really highly rated and was linked with Huddersfield at one point. Maggiorini up front, who's famous, of course, for wearing 69. Yeah, man, it's not an awful team on paper, but I just think that, you know, Filip Georgievic on the bench, Lucas Piazon on the bench as well. I had no idea that he was there. Yeah, there's names that you recognise, but perhaps a combination of having a bad manager, being stuck in a rut of form and that kind of thing has just basically meant that it's game over for them before it even started. But yeah, one win from 26 games is really bad. Frosinone and Bologna are the two teams above them, and they've each managed 3 wins, and they're 4 points adrift of safety. So, yeah, not being a good season for Chievo, we've really got to hope that this is another comfortable win. Our record against Chievo is not actually that bad, I don't think, compared to some of the other lesser teams that we've struggled against. I think we won there. Did we win there 3-1 last season?
Yeah, I believe so. That sounds about right.
Yeah. We won there. Hang on. We won there 4-1 last season. Then we won 3. Yeah, 4-1.
No, that was. Oh, that okay. That was October 2017, so was that last season? Yes, you're
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then we won 3-2 at home last season. I remember that one because we were 2-1 down at halftime and everyone was absolutely fuming about it. Mm-hmm. But then we came from behind and won 3-2 in that one. And then
Andre Silva did that, by the way.
This season, we won 3-1.
Yeah, Higuain had a brace this season. That was like when we all were. I think that was when he did like five goals in 6 games or five goals in 8 games, something like that.
Yeah, and that's October time, so it's about then. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
yeah. So I'm looking right now. The last 5 consecutive games we've beaten them, and each our worst game was 3-2. We've scored at least 3 goals in all those. So
we gotta be hoping to score 3 again. Which is
I
why
I think we're better than all the teams that we've faced them with before, so I think we have to do at least 4.
And Chievo are a lot worse than when we've faced them in the past, it seems, anyway. So, yeah, but I want to guard against complacency and against arrogance, because at the end of the day, it's 11 against 11. Anything can happen. I mean, I don't know what Chievo's most memorable result is this season, but you've got to remember like some of the teams that we've had embarrassing results against, like Benevento and stuff. We can't go into it big-headed, basically.
We gave Benevento their first ever Serie A point and their first ever Serie A win.
Win, yeah.
It was not a good look.
Yeah, not at all, man. Yeah, that was pretty crazy. Fingers crossed that we can get the job done it's Verona, isn't it? In Verona on Saturday night for what could be the last time we play Chievo for a while. Be nice to make it another 6 points from them this season. I guess what's your prediction? I'll have a prediction from you, AJ.
4-0. I think if Piontek starts, I seriously think he gets back to goal scoring. I think this is the time we see a hat trick. We haven't had a hat trick in a while. I think Baca was the last guy to score a hat trick for us in the league. Andre Silva did it last season in Europa. But in the league, I think Baca was the last one, and I think Piontek's going to do it this time. and he jumps Ronaldo for the top of the top goal scorer race until they play. Obviously, I think they have an easy game as well this week. But
yeah, I was actually just about to Google who Juve have got up next. But yeah, it would be nice to see Udinese at home on Friday night. So
this game is actually pretty critical. If you look at the teams surrounding us, you know, obviously we're only a point clear of Inter. We're 4 points clear of Roma. They both have easy games. I believe Inter's playing Spal,
yeah.
And Roma, I don't remember who they're playing, but another level of team, Bologna or something like that. Or is it Cagliari?
Roma have Empoli at home.
Empoli, yeah.
Yeah, but they've got Porto in midweek, which of course...
Yeah, and Inter also has a midweek game also.
Yeah, that's right. But Lazio have got Fiorentina away on Sunday, so that's not an easy game at all, given that Fiorentina are scoring goals for fun. Lazio in their next three have Fiorentina and Inter away, so it's heading towards a crunch time for them. But another thing for us on Saturday is it'd be nice to get a few players firing in time for the derby, which is in a couple of weeks' time as well. That seems to...
We actually have a great schedule leading into the derby with playing Sassuolo, getting the win there at least, and then Chievo. Oh,
hopefully getting the win there.
And then that's it. Chievo's our only game before Inter.
That's it, and we'll have a bit more rest than they do. Obviously, it's come out in the Italian papers today that Wanda really wants Mauro to play in the derby, but I don't see any way that he plays in it at this moment in time. Apparently, there was a team meeting today with all the Inter players and staff because they're going through such a bad run at the moment, and Icardi wasn't present at it. So if he's not at an important team meeting like that, then it says a lot about the relationship between him and the club. So it'd be interesting to see how that plays out. But Lautaro Martinez has, on the quiet, been doing a really good job for them. He reminds me a lot of Diego Melito, who was obviously a pain in our backside for a few years. So it doesn't mean that they don't have a threat. But I think that definitely if we've got a comfortable lead in the game against Chievo, Gattuso will have one eye on that derby in a week's time, because that could be the one that that defines our season pretty much. But it would be nice as well to get into a position where, you know, we're above them going into the game, so the pressure's kind of on them to beat us, to go back above us. So yeah, we'll see how that one plays out, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, so another thing that came out in the news today, while we're on the subject of the Italian papers, because they tend to occasionally spit out some belting headlines. Today's edition of La Repubblica claims that Milan are basically ready to invest €600 million into building a new San Siro, which they would share with Inter. The idea being that it's built on the massive car park that's right next to the stadium, and it is a huge site, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of empty space around the stadium, but they're going to build the new stadium on the basically the complex of where the current stadium is. Mm-hmm. Both teams would play in the current San Siro up until this new stadium opening in 2023. It would have a capacity of 60,000 seats, and they would sell the naming rights to the stadium at €25 million a year to help finance it. Yeah, it says that the Milan have fully embraced the idea of building a new stadium because they think that it'll basically take too much time, too much money to properly renovate San Siro. I mean, it's an old stadium now. It's coming up to, 95 years old, something like that, 1926 when it opened.
Yeah, we've occupied it for 92 years, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's kind of mental. Well, I'll let you go first. Where do you stand on this? For me, you're looking at three options here. You're looking at this, which is obviously us building a new stadium and sharing it with Inter. You're looking at the option of renovating current San Siro, but we don't know how much the cost of that would be. Or you're looking at Milan building their own stadium, which they're the sole occupant of. Which do you think is the best of the options?
Well, it's really tough to tell, honestly. I mean, renovating San Siro would probably be the cheapest of the three, but I don't think financially it's the best option, even though it is the cheapest. And that's because I don't think the city is willing to help us out. I think that was why talks of building a new stadium began, you know, 3-4 years ago, whenever it was anyways. They don't seem to want to help us out on that. They kind of want us and Inter just come up with it on our own, And it sounds like we're really pushing for the new stadium project, not so much Inter. So while they're welcoming in renovations for their stadium from us, they don't seem to want to contribute to that. So financially, it sounds like a lot of that would be down the drain for us, whereas building a new one and sharing it is going to cost more, but then they're also putting in some because they would have to build it also. Whereas San Siro, since it's already there, they don't have to do anything. If we want to renovate, it's going to happen, you know? So that at least forces us to share some of the debt with Inter. The other thing is naming rights. We suppose we're going to be auctioning that off, or not auction, but selling it for like $25 million a year. That adds up pretty quickly.
What would you like to see it called if it was named by one company?
Ooh, the Sempre Milan Stadium. we'll
put
sponsor
a bid in.
It.
$25 million. We'll just borrow it from Elliott Management, and then
there you go. They'd love golden. It. How funny would it be if it was something silly like fucking the Coca-Cola Vanilla Zero Stadium?
Well, I thought Coca-Cola, but I don't think it's going to happen. There's not many, and this is an interesting thing. Like you look at some of the other city derbies that you've got around the world. Milan and Inter basically don't share a single sponsor. So it's not like we're both sponsored by Fly Emirates and it could become the Emirates Stadium or something. Well, shit, no, it couldn't be like the Emirates Arena or something like that. You know, they're Nike, we're Puma now, we wear Adidas. You know, they're Pirelli on their shirts, we're Fly Emirates. So it's like there's no common business that's like the leading candidate. My guess is that it becomes some kind of bank. Probably.
Exactly. It would be the one that's going to finance us for it because while obviously Elliott can put the money up, nobody up front spends 600 million euros. That's something that they would finance as a bank. That's what they would do as a hedge fund. You know, they wouldn't pay it all up front, even though it's there. That's just not how business works. Everything would be divvied up so that we could spread it across and, you know, make some money off of it while we're getting that naming rights also. So it makes sense that it would go to a bank. MetLife is the stadium in New Jersey that they're planning to base it off of. It's an NFL stadium for the Giants and the Jets, which is funny because they're both New York teams, but it's in New Jersey. And the other thing is that stadium also costs like $1.4 billion to make, so I'm not sure where they're getting the figure of $600 million if they're trying to base it off that.
Clearly, it'd be a little bit smaller, but not substantially smaller.
Right, yeah. And, well, the other thing was that's not a covered stadium, and they were saying that ours would be going to be ultra-modern. So I still think the figure's a little low than what it will be if we build a new one. But as for the third option, getting back to the original thing of us owning it outright by ourselves, that would be the best one, just based enough of, you know, the financial backing that Juve has because of their stadium. That's when everything kind of began their upward trajectory. And you've seen it with a couple other teams across Europe as well, the teams that own their own stadiums that aren't really, I mean, obviously they have to pay the capital and the housing costs like that, but they're not paying to the city to rent. You know, they'd own it outright, and so there would be taxes and some other stuff, but there really wouldn't be that monthly, here's, you know, however much we're paying for San Siro, you know. There wouldn't be that to the city. Plus, when it's time to renovate and do things, it's on us. It's not, we don't have to get approval from anyone else and just start doing it. We could just do it, which would be a big plus.
It's something that has been talked about quite a lot on Twitter recently. It tends to be one of the only things when it comes to Milan that I like to monitor what people are saying. Because I feel like it's such a divisive thing between those people who you can clearly tell have been to San Siro and those who haven't. You know, the people who are thinking purely from a financial revenue stream point of view, and those who obviously understand that it's not easy to let go of a stadium like San Siro with all of the heritage and the history that's behind it. I also think that there's a couple of very common myths that are bandied about when it comes to a new stadium. Number one being that we shouldn't consider building a new stadium that is less than the capacity of San Siro. Now, I understand the logic behind that when you look at games against Juve, occasionally against Roma and Napoli, and then obviously the two derbies a year are played in front of 80,000 people. But if you read into what the planned renovation for San Siro is, this is the plan that they sort of finalised between the two clubs. I think it was late last year. The idea was that if they spend 200 million euros renovating San Siro, part of that is going to be removing the top tier anyway and reducing the capacity to 65,000 people. So people saying we should stay at San Siro because it's 80,000 seat stadium, it wouldn't. It's not going to be anywhere. You know,
right.
Whichever solution we pick, I think we're going to be playing in a lesser capacity stadium in a few years. That's just the way it is. That's just the nature of... I understand it as well, because even though our crowds have picked up quite a bit recently, there's still the games where you're playing in front of 40, 45,000 people, and it just looks bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, the game against Sassuolo, we did have 60,000, so we obviously can max out an 80,000-seat stadium in the big games, Napoli, Inter, Juve. But if we're getting 60,000 in the small ones and 40,000 in the real small ones, you know, it makes sense to have a smaller stadium, because just having those empty seats costs us money.
Yeah.
20,000 empty seats cost the teams a lot of money. If you could sell out a 60,000-seat stadium every week, not only does your atmosphere look better, sound better, feel better, and it's more intimidating for the opponents, but it's, like you said, better financially. So it definitely, no matter what, we're going to be in a smaller stadium, whether it's San Siro or a new one. It's just the only thing that makes sense. You know, we don't need these Mussolini-style cathedrals that seat 100,000 people. You look at Napoli Stadium, it's never full, and it's massive. It looks empty on TV,
well.
Always. Yeah, by it's god-awful.
It's the worst stadium in the league, and it gets sort of... It gets sort of, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, trivialised, I guess, because it is occasionally such a hostile atmosphere, and people call it like a cauldron and stuff like that. But if you were to watch a Napoli game, just a random league game against a bottom half team, it's deadly quiet, and the fans are basically in a different postcode to the pitch. You know, it's because of the huge running track there, and it's old, and it looks damp, it looks dull, it's a horrendous stadium. But obviously they've got an issue there with Dylan Laurentiis, or however you say it, because he's threatening to take his bat and ball home about the whole thing because of a dispute with the council about who should pay for the new stadium or whatever. I think he even threatened to move Napoli to Bari's stadium to play their
Champions
League games.
You know what's funny is, that is actually another reason why getting our own stadium makes sense, so we don't have to deal with the city council and the ownership council that already has San Siro. Not that they're giving us any pushback. You know, for the most part, they've been very accommodating and welcoming, but that is a possible scenario in the future that we could avoid by having our own stadium. To your point earlier about you could see the people who have never been and have been to San Siro, it's interesting you mention that, because we actually haven't had this discussion at you and I. But earlier this morning, I went to the dog park, and while I'm watching my dog run around chasing shit like an idiot, you know, I'm just sitting there by myself, and I'm actually thinking of San Siro because I've been reading this news, and I thought of that too. Is like, you know, it's a cathedral of football. Everyone knows about San Siro. It hosted the Champions League final a few years ago. It's such an iconic stadium. You don't stay in a stadium for 92 years if it's not iconic. With as bad as everyone's saying it is, it's close to the situation, you don't stay there that long if it's not just such a heavy thing. You know, just going there, it's intimidating for any team, no matter the form that the team they're playing is in. And that's a pretty heavy thing that a lot of people don't really understand.
I wonder how many clubs in Europe would love to swap stadiums with us.
Exactly.
Would love to
so
play
many.
In San Siro.
So many.
You
I mean,
so
you
many
can identify San Siro from anywhere.
Yeah, it's huge. Like you say, it's a cathedral of football. We've won so much there. And, you know, I think I've mentioned it on the podcast before, but you can never really explain the feeling of when you walk out of the metro station for the first time and you see in this huge open area this absolutely huge concrete and steel structure, and the lights that are coming from it, and the sound, you know, the chants, and it's a magical feeling. And you can say what you want about new stadiums, how they're better revenue streams, whatever, but as far as I'm concerned, you can't really replace the magic of a place like San Siro. A second myth that, you know, the first one was obviously the capacity thing, but just quickly, the second myth that I think is used a lot when it comes to the stadium argument is this idea that if we were to stay in San Siro and undergo the renovation, then we would potentially be missing out on a lot of money compared to if we moved into our own purpose-built stadium. So basically, obviously, Juventus are the ones that are used as a case study because they moved out of a big stadium into their own. It's now the Allianz Stadium, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a sponsored stadium. Report came out in November saying that they earn 55 million euros a year from their stadium through naming rights and through other match day revenues. Whereas the projection from a number of different sources, but it was reported in Il Sole 24, which is like quite a respected financial paper. Mm-hmm. The projection, if we were to renovate San Siro, when you include the naming rights, would be 100 million per season each. So for Milan and for Inter, so that's 200 million in total. So that would basically be almost double for each club what Juve earn from their stadium. So
that's massive.
Yeah, it's huge. So this idea that people think that if we stay in San Siro, we're not going to make anywhere near as much money. The reason that renovating San Siro is even still being considered as an option is because it would work.
Right, and because of how iconic it is, you know, that plays a part of it. Banks, companies, sponsors, they're going to pay so much more for the naming rights of a new San Siro than they would just a new smaller stadium, you know?
Yeah.
For all the reasons we just discussed. So it makes sense. Did they, because I didn't read that article, but did they give any estimates for if we made a new stadium, just to compare it?
No. I could probably find it, but no, it just says what it would be if they basically did a lot of work on San Siro. But the thing with renovating San Siro is that it's been in the pipeline for years. Like Inter had their own plans to do it in 2015, and it was like a 4-stage plan to basically get it up to date. And that was around the time that Milan were planning on building their own stadium over in the Casa Milan area, Porto Romana, it's called.
There we go.
Which I actually visited a couple of times.
Yeah, we had approved the grounds and everything.
Yeah, and that looked like an interesting stadium, the mock-up of it that they had and everything, but it's just not San Siro, is it?
I personally liked it. I know a lot of people hated the design, but coming from America and these ultra-modern American football stadiums, I'm used to that shit. I think it looks cool, so I was down for it.
Well, it was interesting that you see, obviously, they visited the MetLife Stadium in, is it East Rutherford?
Yeah.
Yeah, so in New Jersey. And the other one that they visited, apparently, was the Mercedes-Benz. I don't know, is it the Mercedes-Benz?
In Atlanta.
Arena? Yeah. Yeah,
in Atlanta. It's fantastic.
And do you remember the design for the stadium that was back in 2015? It's kind of similar to how the Mercedes-Benz is now, with that ribbon of scoreboard all around the outside. And it kind of looking a bit like a weird bird's nest kind of thing. So it'd be interesting to see if architecturally they went for that kind of thing again.
Personally, I would hope so. I think that's one of the coolest stadiums out there today. I think it's just a fantastic stadium. And
it just looks mental. It just makes you think, what the fuck have they done there? But it's cool.
Exactly.
It's cool. It's meant to have really good sight lines, and it's meant to be close to the action. So, man, I'm all for
it. I also like Bayern Stadium. Is that the Allianz Arena?
Mm-hmm.
I think it looks cool.
I went there in the summer.
Colorful ball thing.
We did the tour there, and it was lit up in the evening, and it looked amazing. It looked really, really cool.
I think a part of San Siro's charm is just those iconic pillars
and
the metal rafter up top.
Hamster wheels.
That's a great way to put it. If we could incorporate that in the new stadium, I'd be very pleased.
Yeah.
You know, just keep that icon part.
The thing that came out today, I'll read a couple of bits from the report. Basically, what came out today is that this new stadium would be, I'm guessing, a 1.2 billion euro. If we're putting up 600 million euros each, then it'd be a 1.2 billion euro, 60,000-seater stadium. And
I didn't realize that we'd both be doing, I thought it was, total was the 600. That makes a lot more sense.
It's Milan putting up 600 million euros because obviously you can't build a very big stadium for that price anymore.
No.
And it would be done by 2023. And they would transfer the museum and other kind of interesting artifacts to the new stadium. And it's basically going to be a new, slightly smaller San Siro. And that's got me kind of thinking, for those who will understand the comparison of when the Yankees moved from the old Yankee Stadium to the new Yankee Stadium, how they might kind of try and replicate it, but completely commercialize it, you know what I mean?
So I'm so baseball illiterate, I didn't even know that there was a new and old Yankee Stadium.
Mate, look it up. They literally made it so it faces the exact same, I don't know, like on a
did they tear down the old one? I mean, I literally have no idea. Okay. Yeah, they so kind of like what Tottenham one. Did. Yeah.
Yeah. So they built, basically built a replica of it, but just made it a lot more fan friendly. And modern, if yeah. I knew that was
so, that, so that's interesting. Was their stadium just like so far gone that renovating it was no longer an option, that it was going to be make more sense to tear it down and rebuild it the same but new?
Yeah. I think that's it, wow. Basically.
That's nuts.
It was a Steinbrenner thing as well. Like, he wanted to kind of have a legacy there. And, yeah, the new stadium looks really cool, don't get me wrong, but they're not exactly... It's gone the complete other way, you know, from being, like, one of the quote-unquote cathedrals of baseball to now Yankee Stadium's, like, this tourist hotspot. There's Pepsi signs and MetLife signs all over the place, and it's, like... $150 for the cheapest ticket, and you know, it seems to have kind of gone the other way from baseball.
Here's an idea. Sorry, I promise I wasn't zoning out, but I kind of did. Yeah. Elliott Stadium, why don't they sponsor the naming rights? Because they don't plan on keeping the club forever. They sponsor it, and now they have residual income from the club that they just sold for profit.
So I thought about this.
Yeah, okay.
What my only thinking behind it is that it wouldn't make much business sense for them to sponsor a stadium, because they wouldn't see any additional revenue from it, really, because they don't sell a product per se. They're a hedge fund firm. So that's true. It's not like Emirates Stadium where they're selling an airline, or you know,
that's true,
the various other Etihad Stadium, all these stadiums that are sponsored, Allianz that sell services. It's a bit different because of the way that Elliott management operate. But yeah, I did think about that. They might actually, if they're serious about, you know, financially being invested in the club for a long time, I don't see any reason why they don't put some money up to help with the stadium renovation or to help build a new one.
I know, now that I think about it, it makes no sense for them to sponsor it. So yeah, but scratch that total idea.
I can see what you're thinking. Maybe don't think from an Elliott point of view, but think from a club partner point of view.
Right, right.
Let me quickly have a look there's a massive list of our club sponsors at the bottom of our website, which is actually really scary. Banco BPM, that's the Italian bank. That's a definite possibility. They'd have the money to kind of bank for that kind of thing. Diesel, Toyota Tires, DAZN, they're like a media company. Star Casino, or is it DAZN, whatever. Bios Carlin, which I think is a biochemics company. There's options, basically. There's big companies that obviously want to be part of the team. I'd be interested to see what happens there. I'm conscious of time, so we'll move on, shall we, to the readers' questions.
Let's do it.
For this week. Got some interesting ones. We'll start with one from at Being Kate's. I've no idea who this is. but she asks a very, very valid question. Do you ever see Kaká being manager of Milan? AJ, I'll open it up to you first.
Personally, no. I think he very well could. But ideally, Gattuso continues his form and doesn't get sacked. And he would never leave for a bigger club. So I think he sticks around. As far as what Kaká could do in the future, I think he goes a technical route, similar to what Maldini did, but on a lesser extent, focusing mainly on Brazilian scouting. I think he already had an input in the Paqueta deal, so that clearly is a thing. I know he's shown interest in being a part of the club, but I think a technical route would be better suited for him. He is such an iconic figure, such a beloved figure, especially for the younger generation. That was kind of the first superstar that most kids nowadays saw playing for Milan. So to recruit those new players, I think he would be best served in a technical outfit as opposed to a managerial one.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think it's a valid question, because obviously all club legends you would like to see back in some capacity. Sid off Inzaghi, you know, the managers that we've had in the past, it hasn't really worked out for them. And I think that the sort of newer crop of legends will be apprehensive about how it's gone for them. But I agree with you. I think he'll go down more the technical route, perhaps sort of a brand ambassador kind of kind of thing. Or even potentially he might try his hand at coaching at some point. But managerial and coaching is two very different things. So I'd like to see him. I mean, the thing with Kaká is, hasn't he kind of got his own little venture going on in the MLS? Or
I don't know if he still does. I know he was in talks with Beckham for...
Is it the Inter Miami thing?
God, what a terrible name. But yeah, I believe he was in that, but then he was supposed to do that, but then started playing for Orlando instead.
Right.
Because the Beckham deal got pushed back quite a few years. So I don't know if he's still a part of that or not. I think, I would imagine so.
Yeah, maybe. I really know. I just Googled it and nothing really came up. But I think he's announced his retirement anyway. So now he's definitely moved into off-field stuff. Yeah,
although he's playing soon for Milan Glorie.
Yeah, I'm thinking about getting tickets for that.
At San Siro or is it at?
No, it's at Anfield.
Oh, wow. Yeah, go to that.
So it's close by. I went down when Milan Glorie played Arsenal Legends at the Emirates, and that was a really, really good day. Got to meet Marcel Desailly, but the rest of the players kind of jetted off pretty quickly after the game. But that was a really fun day. So yeah, good question, Katie, and I'm going to plug shamelessly a pod that me and her are a part of. Kick off with Katie O'D, check it out over at Being Kate's PRDS, some sort of less serious football related banter. Right, moving on, we've got a question from Vito Bajamale. Regarding the Suso situation, do you think we need to buy another right winger and sell him while the price for him is still decent? Or do we go all in for the left wing position? AJ?
First off, shout out Vito. He's a cool dude. He's follow each other on Twitter, like him. So shout out to you, Vito. Thanks for the question. Ideally, we go all in for Messi. But that's not going to happen. So I think, I really don't know. I mean, I think left wing's far more important right now. So I think we would go all in for that. We actually talked about it earlier today in our group chat. One of the writers brought up the idea of two left wings being signed this summer. Alan Saint-Maximin and Carrasco, which I think is very likely. But I don't know if that excludes the idea of a new right wing, because Suso has that release clause. It's pretty low. I don't know. I guess it depends. Wait till the rest of the season, see kind of what happens in the summer. I wouldn't replace him unless we need to, because he, even though he may be in poor form right now, he's still a fantastic winger and consistent, in my opinion.
Yeah, one thing I will say about Suso is, obviously, we discussed a few episodes ago that the kind of differences between the two parties in the talks over a new deal for Suso, and that there were clubs circling who were apparently willing to activate his €40 million release clause, which seemed incredibly low, or it seems incredibly low when he's in good form. But at the moment, I can't see the management being all hands on deck to get him to sign a new deal where he gets a massive pay rise and his release clause is all of a sudden €100 million. I'm not saying that the management don't value him at any more than €40 million. I think they do. But I just think that at the moment, you know, perhaps they'll be weighing up the budget and they'll be thinking what's available for the summer if we get Champions League, what's available if we don't. And I don't see any reason why we won't be looking for new wingers and new wingers that can complement, either play the other side or can be back up to Suso. I think it's very dangerous when you start viewing your squad as one-dimensional, as in, like, we can only play with Suso in our team because he's the main creative force. So I can see us, like you say, signing one or two wingers that can maybe play on either side this summer. And, of course, we've got Castillejo to think about as well. If he carries on, if he keeps making a good impression, then he needs to be considered to get more minutes next season as well, because we're going to be in three competitions next season, it looks like, regardless, because Europa League, we're looking pretty good for that, even if we don't get Champions League. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens. with Sousa and with whoa, I've just read an interesting tweet here. Someone called Andy van der Meijden, who used to play for Ajax, it says. He's given an interview and he says, I used to sit next to Zlatan, obviously Zlatan Ibrahimovic, on the bus when we were at Ajax. And then one time when he was sleeping, I just got up and kissed him on the mouth. Seconds later, I got a few punches thrown at me.
Why did he kiss it? Like, I don't know. There's got to be... He needs to explain himself, because there's more questions than answers in that.
Yeah, no, it threw me completely off my train of thought, did that. But yeah, sign a couple of wingers, and then the Sousa situation, sort that separately. That's what I'd do, basically. So yeah, we'll see what goes on there. Anyway, next question from a guy called Killian McAnally, at Irish Rossoniero. Hi guys, with us now having Champions League qualification in grasp, what do you think Milan should do in the future to stay at this level? As great as this season has been, I don't see it being any easier next season. In the past, Milan in the Champions League was a given. So, I mean, I guess the obvious answer to that is basically just to keep winning to stay in that position. But I think what he's saying is to basically get us back into Europe's elite and to become a mainstay in the Champions League once again. I'll start with this one. I think that we need to continue to make good decisions both on and off the field when it comes to player personnel, investment in new players, knowing when to sell players in order to recoup some money, because, you know, we talked about this many a time before about the players that we've let go for absolutely nothing and have basically become sunk investments. And we need to keep doing what we're doing off the field, which is seemingly to secure a lot of good business partnerships. We've got a board at the moment which is full of ex-players that clearly care about the club. And we've got owners that seem to be hell-bent on returning Milan to Europe's elite club competition for the foreseeable future. So, yeah, just keep the train moving in the right direction and hope that nothing derails it, I guess. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's really not much to it other than what you said, is keep on doing what we're doing, keep winning. Easier said than done, but absolutely investing in the right players. I think what Elliot's done has been great, you know, investing larger sums of money in fewer players that we need, that we know are going to make immediate impacts, as opposed to spending a shit ton of money on a huge diverse set of players and just kind of hoping they slot in. Obviously, the Mirabelli, Fassone summer, they signed a ton of players and we needed that for depth, and they still cover a lot of things, but a good amount of them fills it off and are already gone. You know, and all the Maldini signings and Leonardo signings are still here with the exception of Higuain, but they're all firing great. You know, Paqueta is almost solely why we're doing so well now, between him and Piontek. And I think signing more players like that will keep us winning. Obviously, we're all in a good environment right now with Gattuso doing well. It seems like all the players get along. It seems like all the management gets along, and the ownership is, like you said, hell-bent on getting back there because this is ultimately an investment for them. They want to be able to turn a profit, sell for like $1.5 billion, you know. So they're going to make it happen. I'm not the guy to ask the question, but it's going to happen. They're going to make
it. It's kind of interesting as well that, you know, a lot of people were apprehensive about us being acquired by an American hedge fund, and there were reports that were going around when they basically got the club off Yonghan Lee because he defaulted on the debt repayment, that they wanted to basically get a quick sale on Milan and just sell to whoever was willing to buy. And actually what's happened is the complete flip side, is that because they're clearly very well run themselves, they now have transferred some of that financial stability and good business practice into Milan, and they seem to be, you know, as we've mentioned, they seem to be absolutely intent on returning the club to the top so that they can sell that asset if they choose to for a profit. So that's good. That's good. So if anyone thought that they wouldn't care about the club, then you're wrong. Anyway, the final question comes from Milan is Red at Toxic_Kalinic, which is a very accurate Twitter handle, I must say. He asks two questions, the second one of which is about wingers for next season, so we'll skip over that. First one, though, is thoughts on the Cotrone and Andre Silva situations. No one seems to want to be the backup for Piontek. If both of them are sold this summer, who should we sign? A striker who's 30-ish? I'll leave that one for you.
Well, I think the situation is honestly almost made up.
Yeah.
Obviously, nobody wants to be a backup striker, but I don't think Cotrone has an issue with his situation like people are saying. I think that's more media stuff. Yes, his agent had comments, but an agent's motive is always to get the most money and playing time for their players. So that would mean moving on for him. But if he could just get Cotrone a new deal, he's obviously going to get agent fees off that, so he'd be content with that also. And I think that's kind of just a back-and-forth playing there. Cutrone's a Rossoneri guy. He's came up in the youth system. He loves the club. He wants to be here. I mean, every time he scores, he kisses the badge and cries. He doesn't want to leave. So I think that's completely made up in the media. He's fine being second fiddle for now because we're going to be in three competitions next season. He will have playing time. It's guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Now, Andre Silva wants to be starting. George Mendes says he wants him to be starting. But, again, it's really not up to the agent. He could push for stuff, but ultimately, he signed a contract. He's a Milan player. If we want him to stay, we're going to force him to stay. We won't. That's not how we operate.
Yeah.
We're not PSG, but we definitely can hold him here. And we could also send him off and, like the question said, get an older striker, which, to be honest, makes more sense. It makes sense to have an older figure who can still put in a decent shift, but is going to be more of a mentor and advice person for the younger star strikers. What happens when you have three strikers on a team that are all 20, 23 and under, I believe? That's going to create A, drama, and B, they're not going to be able to grow from each other. They're going to be able to be competitive and build off that, but they're real. What are they going to pick up? They all know the same stuff. They're learning from the same person.
Yeah.
You know, so it having an older person, like, I don't know why this is the only name coming to my head, but like a Maxi Lopez makes sense. He's not going to play, but he could give some good information to people. Like, Pepe Reina's obviously improved Donnarumma, and he's not playing much. You know, so I think if Andre Silva moves on, an older striker is a perfect fit. I'm a huge Andre Silva fan. Don't want him to leave. I would like to send him out on loan again and bring in an older striker. Sorry, that was kind of a rant.
No, it's all good. I agree with you. I think the Cotrone situation isn't really a situation at the moment. We discussed this at length in the last podcast, but he's kind of become a victim of circumstance at the moment, whereby Piontek arrives as a big money player. We were obviously going to play him from the start. He was red hot to start with, and you don't bench a red hot player. Cotrone is going to get opportunities between now and the end of the season, and I have no doubt that he's going to impress, because there's even more impetus on him now to go out there and show the management, show Gattuso what he can bring. But yeah, I think we've certainly got a lot of leverage over Cotrone, and I use that phrase in the most respectful way possible, because obviously we don't view him as an asset. He's more than that. He's not just a player. He's a boyhood fan of the club and somebody who always wears his heart on his sleeve, etc. But we certainly have a bit of leverage over him when it comes to playing time and the way that he's managed, because he's willing to be patient. He's still young. He's still growing. But I also totally agree with you in that the ideal situation at this point is perhaps to bring in a veteran striker in the summer. And when I say veteran, I mean an experienced summer striker, not necessarily one who's 38 or anything like that. There are a few candidates. I saw somebody mention Simone Zaza on Twitter the other day. I don't really like him per se, but he's kind of the mold that you'd be going for in terms of experience at the top level.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, we've been scouting Falcao's been offered to us.
Right, I was going to mention that.
Yeah, I wouldn't be disgusted with Falcao as long as the financial conditions behind it were right. I think on his day, very, very good player. I think he could do very well in Serie A. Of course, it's the only league that he's not really played in out of Europe's top leagues. So, actually, I don't think he's played in the Bundesliga either. But I imagine he'd be up for a new challenge at this stage in his career. That's the kind of player really that you'd be going for, I guess. Yeah, the striker situation is an interesting one, and one that we're going to have to monitor. At this moment in time, I'm assuming that Andres Silva is playing at Sevilla next year, because even though he struggled as of late, his start to the season that he had will make his obligation to buy fee seem like a bit of a bargain. So I think that. But I mean, I read in the week that apparently Spurs and Torino are two of the teams that are interested in Cutrone. So be interesting to see if interest does mount, whether that forces Milan to do something, give him even more money, get him to sign a new contract on higher money, so he's more okay with being a backup, or whether we're just saying to him, look, sit tight, we're going to be in three competitions next season, you're going to start a lot of games. I think it'll be the latter.
I think if he were to leave, the only way we'd let him leave would be on loan, or if he said, I want to transfer. I don't see the latter of those happening. And I really don't see him going to Spurs, because if his issue is starting time, he's not going to start over Harry Kane, who is, in my opinion, the best striker on earth right now. So Spurs makes no sense. Torino, yeah, because Belotti's shit, and I think Cutrone would walk right
scored
into that.
Scored a great
team,
goal over the weekend, though.
Torino. Yeah, but I mean, you know, we've all scored one great goal over the weekend, haven't we? but I think Torino would be a good loan spell for him. Selfishly, I don't want to ever see him in another jersey. I'd love for him to stay his entire career with us. I think that would be cool, and it doesn't happen enough in today's age. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe give him a little bit of what he wants if the issue really is playing time. Give him the lower table teams. You know, let him play against Chievos and the Spalls and the Frosinones of the league.
Mm-hmm.
And super sub. He's really good at that. So I think he'll get plenty of playing time.
Yeah, I agree with you. Cool. Right, well, that's all the questions done. Don't know if you have any closing thoughts before we wrap this up.
No, let's do it. I really have to use the bathroom, so let's run this up.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, just a reminder before we end it here that we want to send a special thank you to our sponsors, Euro Fantasy League. Make sure to check out their website, eurofantasyleague.com, to join in on the fun. And from a personal point of view, make sure to check out our app and download it if you haven't already. Just search for Sempre Milan on the Google Play or Apple App Store and the Android Store as well. You can get it on there. AJ, do you want to sign out?
Yeah, thank you so much for listening, guys. It's been a blast today. You can find me on Twitter at Torgard45. For more personal stuff that has almost zero football relations, but I am trying to grow my Instagram selfishly, so you could follow me there at Trilgrud11. If you don't follow me, that's okay, but you should.
Yeah, nice one. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher, and for some more Milan-specific, sometimes explicit rants, at Kilpin Chronicle. So yeah, thank you everybody for listening, and we will see you next week. Goodbye.
Patrick, mettila in mezzo Patrick, palla nostra, Suso, tira Alessio, Suso, tira, perché non tiriamo? Ma perché non tiriamo? Gol! Alessio Romagnoli, gol! Alessio Romagnoli! Alessio! Il gol del capitano ancora! Ancora l'ultimo, come Gilardino, detto ieri in conferenza.